this week in Mormons. This week in Mormons. Hey!
This week in Mormons. I think that was good.
Good work, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Well everyone. Done.
Then, well done. In case you didn't know, the show is This Week in Mormons.
This week in Mormons.
I am your co-host, Al Doan.
Hi, Al.
What up, Jeff?
Hey, thank you for bringing us in today.
There you know. Every Sunday, whether you need it or not, I'll bring you in.
There it is. And you're clearly eating while we're recording.
Well, you know, chocolate-covered raisins. Did you realize there are only 25 calories for 15 grams?
That's terrific.
I think that's like one raisin.
I have got to teach you proper recording etiquette.
15 calories. I'm just kidding.
You
anyway,
there, Skitch? You okay?
Skitch.
You good?
My inspiration was Captain Gee and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. Are you kidding? We're here with Captain Gee and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. So, how was your week, Jeff?
Tremendous, as you would say.
I do say that a lot.
This is good. I can try to use Al-isms throughout the show, and you can try to use Jeff-isms. I think we will last on this crusade for a whopping 2 minutes at the most. So, my week was tremendous. It was lovely.
Yes, quite right.
So, I went to see Mr. Bob Woodward.
How's Bob?
It was great. Bob Woodward, you know, famous journalist.
I think he was deep throat.
Yeah, probably was. So I got to sit
there.
Did
you suggest that to him?
I wish I did. All I did was shook his hand and thanked him for being.
You should have stood up and yelled, "I'm deep throat."
See,
and then lit yourself on fire and ran out.
Sure. And I thought that would have been great, especially for my, networking objectives.
Like, by the way, here's a business card, everyone, if you hear of any jobs. And then on the back that says, "Who is Jeff Openshaw?" you can write Burning Man, Deep Throat. That's memorable.
That's the point, you know. That's why, for people don't know, my business card is a very audacious exercise. It has a popping color cover that says, "Who is Jeff Openshaw?" And on the back, my information.
With a line
to write who I am to that individual. Like, for example, I was talking to this woman who did some video editing stuff, and she wanted my card. And so I just wrote, "Social media, foreign affairs, beard!" And now she'll always remember me.
That's right. You won't be forgotten. No. By the way, if any of you have good political opportunities in the D.C. area, we got a good man here. Good man with a beard.
That's right. And I don't care what they say. I won't shave it. I know I don't need to anymore. Gone are those days. when it would prevent me from getting a job.
I shaved mine this week. It's it feels a little odd having it gone.
I can't even imagine what it's. I've been wearing this beard for years now. I don't even know what it would be like to.
Well, you can look at pictures maybe 2 years ago when you didn't have a beard. That should be a good indicator of what it would be.
It's been 3 years actually. I grew the beard 3 years ago.
Well, then look at pictures of. 2007.
You were discussing, if you do simple math, that would be 2008, actually.
Well, 2007 would be a safe year.
That's true. But what you were saying is how it feels weird. And I can look at pictures, but, you know, I forget what it feels like to have.
Well, you can feel my face right now. It's beardless.
I would love to feel your face.
Why don't you
right
feel
now?
A girlfriend's face?
Beardless. Why don't you come here so I can feel your face?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
I think I would like to touch your face.
Oh, I don't know.
I would like to nuzzle up to you.
I don't like where this is going.
And sing.
I'm uncomfortable.
And sing.
Safe word,
song,
pineapple, lady, pineapple.
Lady in red. Is that your safe word? Sing the song, Lady in Red.
Cheek
and especially at
cheek.
The moment when it says cheek to cheek. I will press mine right.
Am I right in assuming that that was every 14-year-old's like go-to song at steak dances?
No, you're not. You're totally on base.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, I remember distinctly as a 14-year-old, like, that was the slow dance song. And when that would hit up, man, if you weren't dancing with the girl you've been waiting for all night, it was a tough ride home.
Yeah, I never really went to dances.
My mom used this logic on me. You have to support your leaders. Ergo, you must attend the dances that they plan.
I guess that makes sense. I've never been much of one for dances in general. Even in my single adult days, I just don't like them.
When this was maybe, I was probably 16 at the time. Went to it. Like, I tried to go as rarely as I possibly could. And we lived about an hour from the Steak Center, so there was often things I could do to get out of it, either not telling my mother that we had one coming up or whatnot. Well, so anyway, we got roped into going down there. No, I was 15 because I wasn't old enough to drive. We get roped into going to a steak dance. And we show up down there, and it was me and my buddies, and we tried to be the cool kids, right? And so we went and got a gallon of chocolate milk from the store down the street from the Steak Center and stood in the back drinking it. We thought we were pretty cool. Well, we got chastised by the leaders, and they demanded that we go and ask girls to dance on the next slow song. And so we buoyed up our bravado as a bunch of 15-year-olds. There was like four or five of us. We decided this is it. We were going for it, right? We were going for it. And the next slow song was Styx, Sail Away. Have I told this story before?
No, you have not. Sail Away is a great song because it takes minutes to get to the Sail Away
part. No. It takes 3 minutes to get to the Sail Away part. And it starts off very slow, right? Like a piano riff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so all my buddies are like, all right, let's do this. We're doing it. So we all go ask girls to dance, and I take this girl out to the middle of the floor. And everybody else who kind of knows their way around 70s music is like, wait a minute. We gotta wait out the first part of this song, and we'll dance at the end. So we're like almost completely alone on the dance floor. And I'm doing my little deacon weave, you know, where you're just bobbing back and forth with this girl.
Oh, yes.
We're doing the circle, and like I'm nervous. I'm trying to make chit chat, and all her friends are sitting like maybe 20 feet away, cheering her on, us on, and it took me about a minute or two to get out there. And so we had about a minute of dancing, and then like the big drums come in. It's like dan 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 dan, far across. Like the scream comes in, and the whole bit. And I'm like I'm looking at her, and I'm mortified, and she's looking at me, and she's like. Mortified, and her friends are laughing hysterically, and she very quietly says, "You don't have to keep dancing with me. We can just go sit down." And me, being the gentleman, says, no, we will dance all the way through this song, thinking that I was being noble, and so we just like rocked back and forth dancing. Well, in the next 3 minutes, everybody gets up to fast dance all around us. And so we were like, we had this circle around us that was letting us slow dance. It was pretty rough. But anyway, that's a little story
about dances
and
love and sticks.
Wishing that I had Christopher's Lady in Red and not your beard. That's how I connected all that.
Took I like it. As a quick anecdote, my worst dance story.
Yeah.
I was pretty fresh off the mish. And some kids made me go down to Huntington Beach for the Huntington Beach dance. And I was not excited to be there. I just don't do well in dances. I don't know why.
Especially like, Huntington Beach dances.
I'm a pretty like wacky guy. I mean, I am, but I just don't like it at dances. I don't know, whatever. So after a while of pretending I cared about anything that was going on there, I just gave up. And I couldn't go anywhere. I rode down with people. I didn't have a car. And so I went into the chapel of that Steak Center. And walked up to the stage area, and I think I, like, played around on the piano for a minute or something. And then I laid down behind the pulpit on the floor of the stage.
Yes.
And I took a nap.
Okay.
And I hung out there for a long time, basically until the dance was over. And then I went home. That was my greatest dance experience.
Oh, you're a pathetic child.
I'm a ball of fun. That's fine.
that is absolutely pathetic. Speaking Don't be like
ball,
him, kids.
Speaking of balls of fun, what about balls of fire and how none of them fell on us yesterday?
Dude.
2 days ago, whenever you listen to this. Saturday.
That was awkward.
No rapture for anyone. And we
however, when the Iceland volcano started going, I was like, this might be it. This could be this.
But that happens all the time. Silly Iceland. My main thing is we have different beefs here with the rapture thing. I was just so burned out on people thinking that they were amusing or witty or whatever, posting random things about the rapture all day long from the same accounts, just saying stuff all the time. It was, you want to talk about jumping the shark? The rapture jumped the shark.
We kind of got an interesting insight into how people will respond to, well, like, because we all know that eventually we will have a rapture-like experience, right? Like, that's coming. I don't think anybody can punch in a date out of math codes from the Bible. But we know it's coming, right? And so eventually there will come a time when these conversations will be had. And I suspect people will respond much the same way as they did to this. It was kind of an interesting insight into people's kind of, I don't know, it felt very Days of Noah-esque to me, kind of with the mocking and the, what's really sad about it all, though, is that these people, like the followers of this, right, they had a fairly, I don't know, is a good belief or good faith in something that was just a little bit misguided, and now with, like, there's no recovering from this, and so their faith is completely destroyed. Right, like you can't come back from this and be like, well, we've been telling people about this and sold our house and the whole bit. How about those Giants, huh? They're gonna have a good season. Like, you just can't pull out of that, and so their faith is obviously gonna be very shaken, and that's kind of sad. That's kind of sad to see, especially because it's grounded in good things. It's just a little bit misaligned.
Yeah, and you want to talk about, like, eat, drink, and be merry, man. I mean, how much of that did you see?
Oh, the rapture parties?
To spite people like this. I mean, I know it seems silly, but yeah, we're in the same boat as far as the general belief of when and, you know, what would happen and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, I do feel badly in that sense. We get why the rapture is kind of silly sounding, but yeah, the rapture parties.
Well, it was silly because a guy tries to pull a date out of, you know, out of his rear end and just say, nope, it's 6 o'clock, this is going to happen. And we all know that's not realistic. And so that part is humorous, because we could all look at it and be like, yeah, it's not going to happen like that. That's not the way it works. But no, a little bit awkward. And the parties and stuff. I mean, you can't tell me you didn't get a make out that world's ending tomorrow. Might as well. Come on, baby.
You don't want to die a virgin, do you?
Does that work? That works.
It has worked. It has worked many times in the past. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I believe you. And how is it that people are worried about me? I'm the good guy. I was the good son.
I first learned how well that move can work when I watched Independence Day.
Oh yeah.
Because when they're sitting there out in the Imperial Desert, and all of the aliens are showing up, and he pulls that move on the girl. She gets into it until her crazy brother drives.
Deep impact, anyone? Deep impact?
No such you don't want to die a virgin scene happens in Deep Impact, my friend.
Two 14-year-olds, like, get married and start a life together, don't they?
Well, what are you going to do? There was a deep impact.
I have a brother-in-law that cried during that movie.
Do you still mock him relentlessly?
I do.
For this?
I do.
Okay, good. Hey, by the way, so did you see our dear friends over at MoBatch are getting a little bit of play in the Mormon press?
Yes, I did see that. So they got the new one coming
Woo!
Up. Anything amazing? Have you been watching the upcoming? I honestly
yeah, haven't. And a lot of it's been painful. So
there's a lot of girls that you're like, please don't.
Here's the problem. It's just that Aubrey was tailor-made for this thing the first time out.
Right. She had appeal across the board.
Exactly. It's hard to get that again, you know, unless it is. It just is. Unless they're going to throw a fastball or a curveball, rather, and the real Mormon Bachelorette will be none of the ones who have applied.
But there's a few of them that I'm like, hey, girls, listen, we should talk.
That's true. That's true. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I know you and I guess we could put this to the listeners as you wanted to.
Yeah.
Al and I are now on different sides of the fence as to whether or not we should continue with
Jeff loves the Mobach throwdowns.
I think it's hilarious, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners slash readers rather enjoy
As the Ukrainians say, байдуже.
I have met people, I have made connections in my life because of those. Not just the podcast, but because people first saw that and then got into the podcast.
Well.
And they have talked to me about it, and so
if,
I saw that.
Here's the deal.
Funny.
If you are against us doing them, post an angry post. If we get, oh, I don't know, a half dozen or so, then I will fight Jeff to the death to not have to do these again.
You see, this is the deal. I love our listeners. And I want to give them the product they seek. Al, on the other hand, treats this show like his forgotten stepchild and does not want to invest the time to give you, dear listener,
that is such a lie. That is such a lie.
The experience you deserve. It takes too much time to do it. Watching them makes me want to vomit. It makes me want to vomit too, sir. But that is why I feel that we can vomit together. Together we can vomit.
What's ridiculous about this is that, like, well, no, I don't think it's ridiculous. It's props to Erin Elton and her crew for getting the publicity they're getting. But it's a little bit, like, that's a lot of publicity from it all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we always feel how we have felt about this. By and large, it is.
What's especially ridiculous
is that, to watch
is that there's nobody that demands that, like, a fair process be put in place. We talked to Erin early on, and we said, what's the process for choosing the new Bachelorette? And she says, a process is in place. She and Ashley, or Aubrey, I think, will be choosing the new Bachelorette. There's no, like, everybody in the world could vote for one. They don't care. They're just picking whoever they want.
There's no committee. It's true.
Yeah.
But then again, that is the right of the producer. They are the ones seeking the talent to make.
Well, but they give the illusion that there's some sort of a runoff, right?
That is true.
Like, I can put it up there, and if I get enough people to see me, then I have a chance. No. Nothing like that.
I know. So anyway, not to dabble with it for too long, but so do let us know what you think then of.
Oh, speaking of. Of giving us your feedback. So I've decided, and you might notice, I sound a bit chipper this evening. Of course you noticed. You're good people. Too kind. I just got back from a 3-mile run on a Sunday evening. I've never really exercised before on the Sabbath. I've always kind of taken a break from the exercise. But now I'm kind of to that point in my life where I'm like, you know what? Exercise during the week, really. It's not taking a break from my normal routine. I should exercise when I find time. And so I went on a run this evening. Felt great. Enjoyed it. Couldn't think of anything I'd rather be doing. Jeff, however, disagrees with my rationale. Yes?
Well, I am elated that you had a terrific time. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You won.
Wait, but no, about the working out on the Sabbath.
Yes, apparently we are also on different sides here. I don't think one should work out on the Sabbath. Where do you draw the line with that, of course?
Wait, why don't
because you? It is the same, it is the equivalent of labor on the Sabbath day. Is it not?
Is it?
It's labor.
I wouldn't equate it to labor.
What would you equate it to? Joy. Everyone, like, knows that running was created by Satan.
Taking a bath?
No, taking a bath is pleasant. And, and
right,
relaxing.
It's something to kind of beautify your body.
Taking a bath,
clean up
can
a bit,
soothe you and draw you closer. Let me ask you this: I'm going to go all Spencer W. Kimball on you. Does
okay.
Running on the Sabbath bring you closer to God?
When I listen to talks, it
you
does.
Never listen to talks while you run.
I do.
Lies abound from your mouth.
Here's my thought though: is like, if it's work, if you're like putting in 2 hours in the gym or something, yeah, I might be against that. But like going for a leisurely run in the evening, I don't know. It was something just to get out of the house, get moving.
Now, and I'll admit here, well, that's the difference, because it's a fine line. I don't mind taking a nice walk on Sunday. What's wrong with that? And
if you're a really fat person, that's the equivalent
exactly.
of a run.
And if you do go to family things at times, how often do you have little cousins or nieces and nephews? And you rough house and run around the yard with them or something like that.
Toss a football.
All
a
on
bit,
Sunday.
Sure.
And yet we don't think twice about that. And I admit I don't either. I enjoy it just as well. But I guess, I don't know, I feel like going on a run takes it to the next level because I bother to put on running gear, my running shoes.
Right, put on shoes.
I mean, I'm clearly going out to exercise.
Yeah. So. The reason why I'm interested in our audience feedback is because this is the first time I've ever done it, right? Look,
I had a
legitimate conversation, like I thought through it and I was like, no, I'm okay with this. I like this. I feel like this is a good activity to be engaging in, because my alternative really was going home and watching TV or something like that, right?
I guess. So let us know what you think. I don't know. It's a fine line, but I don't think that full up lacing up and going out for an exercise run is a... Because how is that any different from putting on your swimsuit to go do some laps on Sunday?
Now, the difference, too, would be if I ran every day, like if I had a workout routine that went 6 days a week or 7 days a week, then you take that one day to rest and let your body recover, right? Like, I'm not against... Like, well, I think that that is wise because that's the purpose of the Sabbath. It's kind of let your body recover. But in my situation, I don't know. It's not really recovering. I sit in a chair all week working.
This is true.
It was nice to get out.
I agree.
Give us your thoughts.
Let's just say this. People. I hope the rapture comes this Saturday so that you can be accountable for the...
I'm putting up the question on our Facebook channel right now.
While you can type that up, I'm going to talk about a lovely article entitled "There Is Beauty... All Around." Good old feminine Mormon housewives, love it or hate it. Basically, the article, I'm not going to read anything verbatim from it necessarily, but it basically talks about what's up within the church, how somehow we think it's okay to refer to certain general authorities who shall remain nameless, who are German nationals, who are hot. And
come on, Uchtdorf's been the cute apostle.
I know he has been, but when you really think about it, why are we okay with this? You know? Now, I'll admit, there were people back in the day who would argue that David O. McKay was a handsome man. But that's as far as that generation would go, for example. He's a handsome man. Now, you honestly, the great thing is in this article, you can Google President Uchtdorf handsome and get hits all over the place. Because there are entire posts, photo albums, everything devoted to President Uchtdorf. He might as well be on the cover of Tiger Beat, okay?
What would the German equivalent of Tiger Beat be?
Tiger Beat.
Yes.
I just said Tiger, you're
welcome.
You'll
remember when we did our our like feet on the street bit out in Provo.
Yeah, one of our greatest episodes ever.
That a lot of, like, you had that little snippet at the end that was all I love Uchtdorf.
Well, I asked everyone who the most attractive general authority was.
And they all came back. Uchtdorf.
Except for one person, a guy said, I love Oak's baldness, which was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Figures. Okay. Right. Fellow baldies.
He wasn't bald. But it was just strange.
Well, my one thought here, like the one piece of legitimacy to this argument is the, like I remember getting a story, a friend of mine as a missionary had a friend. So it was legit hearsay. This may have never happened. But
wait,
his friend,
legitimate hearsay.
He heard from his friend.
All right.
So supposedly, Elder Oaks came, gave a talk to a bunch of missionaries. At the end, the missionary got up to take a picture with Elder Oaks and said, "You know, hey, my whole family loves you. Would you mind if I put bunny ears on you for the picture?" And Elder Oaks said, "Are you kidding me?" He's like, I have a mantle of the apostleship. You absolutely may not. Right? Like, it was, he just,
yeah,
was,
I've heard that too. Yep.
Not horsing around about that, right? And so my thought here, and in Jesus the Christ, it talks about how the word apostle has, you know, kind of a very holy connotation to it, and often we'll refer to them just as the Quorum of the Twelve. And not the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, to kind of avoid that frequent repetition so that it doesn't become like common verbiage that we're using.
Okay.
Right? So obviously there's some like don't mess around with the mantle, the calling, the special witness essence of what they do that's involved here. And so that's my one little plug is You know, I could care less, but
it seems like an irreverent, an inappropriate way to refer to the Lord's anointed, is I think what you're trying to say.
So, I'm not against having, like, I don't know. Well, because they're real people, right? Like, Uchtdorf, you see the man, he's adorable.
Real apostles, real issue. Everything's about to get real. When 15 men share one house.
That would be the most respectful episode.
We take away all of their
double
ARP cards. No, yes. I think we should start the show. The real world. They should do the real world in Salt Lake City. It would be awesome.
They're like, oh, hello. Should we go out tonight? We could get some froyo.
Let's go to Iceberg. Maybe then we can get some fry sauce afterwards. Groovy.
You're the best. No, you're the best.
What should I wear? Should I wear my Birkenstocks or my Birkenstocks? And do you think I should wear socks with them or should I wear socks?
I brought 10 sweater vests.
Also, I'm going to wear these plaid shorts with a striped shirt. What do you think?
I feel like we're stereotyping.
Utah? Yeah. The amazing thing is we have a fair number of listeners from Utah, and yet we go out of our way to make fun of it.
So. I don't feel like we go out of our way to make
fun
of
it. Okay, I go out of my way to make fun of
it. It comes to us.
Yes. No, just when we think we're going over the line and we think, I don't know if we should do this anymore, then Utah says, here, guys, here's a way.
Take
Gives
this.
It to us.
All right.
So anyway, so
Uchtdorf,
get it together, ladies.
He,
no,
he's adorable.
Know your role.
But don't say it.
Don't say it.
But don't say it.
Do not covet another woman's husband, okay?
Mum's the word when it comes to the cuteness factor. All right, so in some actual Mormon news, we have a Merrill Lynch discriminating against one of its employees over his LDS membership. So essentially what happened here, this guy who he was recruiting from his alma mater, which was BYU, and so they had a lot of LDS employees. People started complaining that there were too many Mormon employees working at this branch of Merrill Lynch, and brought specific allegations against him, saying that he was preaching and that he was not too flamboyant, for lack of a better term, about his religious beliefs. And
there has to be a better term than flamboyant.
I like that term.
Okay,
actually.
I mean, you said for...
Creating an environment of favoritism to his personal religious beliefs, and his manager told him to tone down the LDS traits that he had. And in the end, he files a complaint against his boss, who tells him to tone this down. The HR guy goes and tells his boss that he had filed a complaint against him by name, which is a huge no-no in HR. And then it becomes a very hostile working environment. He has to leave. And so then he files a claim of religious discrimination, as well as 6 other counts against his boss. So my interesting story, my thought on this that I wanted to discuss a little bit is there's a lot of, I think a lot of stands that we can take as LDS people that we don't just in an effort to fit in more.
Absolutely.
But that we could. Like, there's a lot of religious rights, I think, that we're afforded that we don't take just because we're trying not to kick against the pricks, as angels would say to Saul. And so, like, the idea that that this guy is recruiting or being told to recruit LDS people, and then he's actually living around that, and, like, people ask about Mormon issues, and I'm always very reluctant in the workplace to have discussions, but I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, hey, if you're asking, I will have this conversation. I don't even care. And so I just throw it out there and we'll chat about it. And it doesn't bother me that much to do that, even in a workplace, but there's a lot of people that I think avoid it. The problem, though, is that I've worked in companies that are like predominantly Jewish or predominantly, you know, Baptist or predominantly whatever. And, you know, you get the old ladies that can put up the religious calendars, and you get the old ladies that they bring in the fundraiser stuff for their church and put it up. And, like, I don't care. But when a Mormon does it, people seem to take offense. And that, I don't know, like stuff like this where they just kind of, he really is just being picked on because Because he's a Mormon. It's kind of silly. A little bit ridiculous.
I love
crying religious discrimination anymore. I remember when I got home from my mission, the company I was working for wanted to put me on a shift that forced me to work Sundays. And I screamed religious discrimination. I was like, you would let a Muslim woman wear a burqa, would you not? I need Sundays off. It's my religion that dictates this. I'm not allowed to work. They backpedaled pretty heavily. And things were
good.
Fine.
Good for you.
So use that Mormon nest to your advantage. Don't be afraid to sue a Merrill Lynch boss if he tries to shaft you.
I mean, why not? I mean, this took place in the Inland Empire of...
Have you ever been discriminated against religious-wise, Jeff?
I mean, I'm sure I have, you know, in one way or another, obviously, throughout my life.
Workplace.
But yeah, I'm trying to think. Nothing in particular comes to mind. I had a job once where the office... There were actually a fair number of LDS people working in our office, which was surprising. But most of the powers that be didn't mind making lots of friendly ribbing of the church and this and that. I've got, like, thick skin, so I didn't mind it much per se. But there was a point when the VP called me in his office to ask me if I was offended by anything or this or that. Namely because he thought I hated the team because I'd often leave for lunch and I didn't want to eat in the conference room with people. It was really because I just didn't want to be in the office and I wanted to get out and be away from the office for an hour and read a book or something. And he was concerned it was because I was extremely offended about teasing for my religion or this or that. So nothing major.
I don't think I don't think being overly sensitive is, like, I wasn't trying to say that, right?
But I know what you mean. Yeah, but what I'm saying in this situation, it was easily the kind of thing that other people, there are those who, not that I don't take our religion seriously, but who, you know, could feel picked on or this or that. And I've been in situations where I could see others taking much more offense than I did.
What I'm against is people taking advantage of us because of our LDS beliefs, right? Like where they build kind of this fake set of rules that just applies to Mormons. That's no good.
Yeah.
Merrill Lynch, fix this wrong.
Evil goes to you.
Thank you, Routers, for reporting it.
Evil. So, so I found one of my favorite articles I found in a while, actually. They have some sort of subsection on examiner.com for Salt Lake City. Not quite sure what all this is, but a section called LDS ratings. And everyone knows that I'm very much into monitoring the entertainment industry, particularly the movie industry. And I'm like, ooh, ratings. This will be exciting. LDS ratings. What are they going to say? And then, of course, the subtitle is, it's LDS ratings, priest. So I know that this is an LDS-centric article written to review the terrible, terrible, terrible movie that came out 2 weeks ago, Priest. This has to be good.
Yes.
It has to. So anyway, she talks about, you know, explains the ratings, G, PG, PG-13, and R. I'm sorry for our non-American listeners. Indulge us for a moment. Of course, the biggest problem is the PG-13 rating, which I agree with, because the PG-13 is very, very broad, and it's hard to predict. I mean, it's true. You can see some PG... I've seen... For example, okay, The Social Network was PG-13. The King's Speech was R. I've seen both of them. And far and away, the more questionable movie as far as content is The Social Network, even though it's PG-13.
It's true. But they said less F-words, Jeff.
They did, but instead they had very clearly implied sexuality, shown drug use, a lot of stuff in there. It was a much...
I saw the edited King's Speech, by the way. It was great.
Was it really weird? Did they just, like, bleep it or just cut out the audio when it... Like, what happens when he goes on his little rant? Bueller?
Yes? Was that a...
What happened?
Was that a question? Oh, it just...
Yeah, generally when I say, what happens when...
Oh, I thought you were leading
that,
in.
That is
I
how,
thought you were leading in as a rhetorical question. So...
That's how one
all
phrases
he does,
a question.
All they do is they say... Is they like... It's like an obvious TV dub, right? They say, frick and fetchin'.
Oh, is that what they do?
Yeah.
Oh, the funny thing was, as a side note, the old guy who used to own Cougar Video, you know, one of the companies that would edit movies on its own.
Oh, is that what that was?
What?
Cougar Video. What a great name.
No, but remember, I mean...
What a great name for a video rental place.
You know, but like Clean Flicks, all those those places that thrive.
How ironic that Cougar Video was about making clean videos.
I know, it is kind of weird. But he cried foul, namely because, you know, he's like, what, now the movie industry is editing its own movies and then putting them out there, and what we were doing was wrong. There was an article on that recently.
Cougar Video.
Wanted to give them love. The difference was, of course, they were selling the videos for profit from a burned copy of a DVD, and they wonder why that was not kosher. So anyway, Priest is reviewed here, and they try to understand the ratings. For those of you who don't know what Priest was, it's Paul Bettany, who has a knack for making terrible films, even though he's a good actor. And the vampires and priests and
yeah, we don't
stuff.
Care. Anyway.
Yeah, it goes down. It's very violent, apparently, and very weird. So here are the main things. One, the review says, this movie was brilliantly done. I can't take the review seriously based on reading that when a movie is 8% on Rotten Tomatoes. But then looking at it from an LDS standpoint, the film is definitely not for a 13-year-old. It's very dark. It's very graphic. You see scenes of humans and vampires being torn apart. I'm guessing that's more alluded to because if you saw actual carnage of bodies being torn asunder, that would make it an R for torture porn. So I don't really get that one. There are
is
scenes
that
of
a
humans
term,
being...
torture porn?
Torture porn are movies like Saw and Hostel.
That's a term,
yes.
Though? Like if you
that
said
a
that
term,
to a movie person?
Absolutely. I did not make that up.
They'd be like, oh, yeah, torture porn. I remember back in 78.
Oh, and of course right here, she makes the point to tell us that this is not a movie where you walk away feeling warm and fuzzy inside. The movie is rated PG-13, but it would be more appropriate to rate it PG-17 for its graphic horror and
wait,
violence.
Wait, does she argue that there should
line.
Exist a PG-17?
No, I think she just made that up in her last paragraph. Now, the thing I love is, so if it's PG-17, isn't that the same thing as R?
That is what a PG-17 would equal.
Because isn't R no one under 17 admitted without a parent?
NC-17, I believe, is the term you're thinking of.
Don't even get me... No. Ow. R means that it's restricted, but kids who are under 17 technically can enter with a parent or guardian. NC-17 means no one under 17 can go in. End of story. Doesn't matter if you have a parent accompanying you or not.
Whoa. Okay. So she argues that there should that this should be rated R.
This should be rated... No, it should be PG-17. I think there should be a PG-17
Did you?
And
did
R,
you pull this
I
whole
guess.
Story in just so you can make fun of her for rating it PG-17?
Pretty much. Well, and forgive me. Well, I showed you right there on the thing. I told you why I love this for a number of reasons. One, it gives Priest a good movie review. Two, it's devoted to LDS ratings. And three, it recommends PG-17, which is the same as R. Yes, so that's basically all I want to do.
Does she do other LDS ratings, I wonder?
That's what we need to find.
I see Priest, A Look at the Classics, The Matrix.
Oh, that's all she has?
And Waiting for Superman is an instant... What'd she say?
So she has Priest, which just came out, and then she has The Matrix. Which
Waiting
came out
for Superman is a must-see, and A Look at the Classics, What About Bob?
Well, that I'll agree with that one.
So all four of those.
I could go off on a rant here on the rating system in the United States, but I don't know if you want me to.
The Matrix is rated R for mild language, sci-fi violence, and the possibility that you will question your whole existence and wonder, am I in The Matrix?
Oh, she needs to die.
Is that why it's rated R, Diana Sperry?
No, the weird thing is the first Matrix, I still don't even know why it's rated R, honestly.
I've still never seen, like, I've seen it on
I've,
CBS.
I saw it completely uncut back in the day, and there was nothing, it was no more violent than a Bourne film. And there was no language.
Bourne ultimatum?
I think they honestly pushed for an R rating. Because they wanted it to be edgier. Sometimes studios do that. Because there was just no reason I can see why the first Matrix was rated R.
Those poor suckers.
Lost on me. Anyways, the rating system is a big mess. It makes no sense. Please explain to me why a movie that's NC-17, such as the famous Showgirls, for example, which has nudity and all sorts of things in it, that means someone over 17 can go see that in the theater, and yet that same individual cannot go to a liquor store and buy a Playboy because he is not 18.
But...
How does that make any sense?
He could go and see Priest. Because it leaves you with a dark feeling.
Exactly. Of course. And not only that, they don't enforce PG-13 or anything. You can just... anyone.
So, we've got some...
That's all. You can move on.
The Boise Temple is closed this summer for extensive renovations.
I think it's going to be longer than just the summer. Isn't it going to be closed for a while?
What does it say?
Like, this is going to be a hardcore renovation.
Yeah, the temple's going to have to be rededicated at the end. So, probably... Man... Hawaii being closed for 2 years, that was rough. Hopefully it's not that long.
And they've closed Boise in the past. I think it was pretty soon after it was originally dedicated because it had a lot of use. I wonder what they're doing here. The first thing that pops in my head is I wonder if this is such an extensive renovation along the lines of the one in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Bueno.
Because in Buenos Aires is the same style as Boise, that kind of classic steak center looking temple from the 80s. But instead they are adding basically two new buildings that look like the steak thing, kind of making it like a pinwheel style structure where you enter at the axis.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, so I don't know if that's what they're planning with Boise. There aren't any details on it yet, but that's what's going on.
Interesting.
Also, the open house dates for the, get ready for this one, the Quetzaltenango Temple.
You even speak the Spanish.
Quetzaltenango is not a Spanish word. Quetzaltenango. That has Quechua written all over it. So,
Quetzal.
Anyways, open house dates have been announced. The temple is clearly constructed in the same vein as the one in Kyiv. For example, of recent new temples, or Panama City in Panama. Anyways, open house is going to run from Friday, November 11th, 2011, until the 26th of November. And then it will be dedicated on the 11th of December of this year. So, hey, congratulations.
Opa. Opa. Yeah, congratulations indeed.
You're my best friend.
All right, the Susan Brock case, she was the one that told her bishop that she was bumping uglies with a underage boy.
And this is not the Hummer mom. This one is from Arizona.
For lack of a better term.
Let's keep it straight.
Bumping uglies. This is kind of a good case to follow because the bishops are not held accountable here. From what I'm told, the reason why they were threatening to bring the bishops in is because they dealt with it in a slower fashion than they would have liked. They should have called the authorities right away. Instead, they called in the boy's father.
Well, and the thing is, and then when they told them about this as well, rather than call the authorities, they called church attorneys,
right?
Instead of actually calling, law enforcement, which I could understand there actually being a case there for that. I'm not a bishop, but I also understand that in cases of actual illegal stuff, they're supposed to.
Well, it makes sense that they would. I don't know if you're a new bishop, it makes sense to be a little bit timid about that and just want to check, be like, all right, how do I? I don't know what to do here. This girl's being sketchy. So, if you were a bishop, I don't know, I'm all for, like, a little bit of protection there, just because you deal with a lot of junk as a bishop. Yeah. You have a lot of stuff coming through there. No,
absolutely.
No reason to, like, I don't know, go after those guys for doing and in the end, I don't know, train them better, church, train them better.
Well, that's what I think it comes down to, because bishops deal with a lot of stuff, but I can't imagine that many of them actually deal with things that cross this line into actual sex crimes like this, for example. I mean, they deal with a lot of messed up immorality stuff, but a lot of immorality is completely legal, is the thing.
Yeah.
As far as the law is concerned. But as far as, I think it's much rarer the case when a bishop is actually presented with something of this nature, especially when you're dealing with, statutory rape, effectively legitimate statutory rape of an adult with a minor. So.
Well, so, dear bishops out
there. It's hard,
but
at the same time, if you ignorantly speed or do something else, you're still held accountable for it.
It's true.
So. Sorry, I feel like I cut you off. I did not.
No, you're right.
My fault.
I wonder, I don't know, that would be a tough blow to a bishop, I would feel like, especially, so it took him longer. I don't know. It's hard. You can put yourself in the shoes of any number of actors in this scenario and feel differently about the outcome. So,
yeah, definitely. So we almost did this article last week, but we decided not to. Joanna Brooks writes some columns here and there. She's a noted Mormon blogger, and this is brief. But she's talked about Mitt Romney, and she said, "quote Romney is what many Mormons call a TBM or true believing Mormon, an Orthodox believer and devout practitioner of the faith." Unquote. So here at this website called Faith Promoting Rumor, and I agree with them. I don't know that a lot of Mormons know that phrase. Does anyone here ever use the phrase TBM? Al? I've never heard it in my life. I never
Bowel movement? I've used it before.
Oh, okay.
The
Tubular Bodacious Militia?
Turbinator BMAC? Yeah, I've used that.
Turbines, burners, and missiles?
That's burners and missiles. That's good.
Tunisia, Beirut.
The Turner Bachman Motor Drive. Sure. Yeah.
I've never heard of True Believing Mormon ever. I don't understand where she got this from. I think she made it up.
You know what's even worse than this is when acronyms about like dating etiquette and stuff get thrown out at you by girls. And you're like, wait, do we say that? Is that a real term?
Yeah, it's weird. So let's just, people, if you have heard of a TBM, by all means.
To be determined.
Put us in our place because I have never, ever heard that before. And it's also just dumb to label Romney as a TBM as if it's like that exalts him somehow. And of course, this is in comparison to.
I think we should all carry badges or like cards that are TBM. Identity card. And then when you transgress, they can be like, pull out your card. Let me cut a corner off.
No, it'll be like hypercolor. Remember those?
No.
It'll change based on, you know, moods or heat.
Yeah, that would be funny too.
Goodness of it. And of course, mentioning John Huntsman. John Huntsman is not putting his headquarters in Utah. And Utahans are not happy because they feel like he's trying to look away from Utah.
Well, look at his. How do you keep that tan in Utah? You got to go to Florida.
Exactly. So he's in Florida, which I think is a strategic move, both because Florida is an important state and also because he's clearly, from a political perspective, trying to not be regarded as a Mormon governor from
the super the image that accompanies
Utah.
This article is one of my all-time favorites.
Because it has John Huntsman speaking while Obama is kind of just like looking ponderously into.
John Huntsman looks like a
president?
Ventriloquist's puppet. He's like, ah.
Yeah. So don't be mad. Haters don't hate. John Huntsman's just playing.
Haters. Yeah.
John Huntsman's just playing the game, people. We're going to sit here and judge him. Is he a TBM? No. He's a TJM.
No.
Totally Jack Mormon.
True.
Totally Jack Mormon. Woo. That's going to do it.
Did you see the
no more
the mommy blogger? Mentioned on 2020.
Oh, I always forget her name, but the one from the plane accident, yeah?
Yeah, she got featured in Mormon Messages. Also pulled into 2020. Kind of a cool little bit. You're welcome to share that around with your peeps.
Yeah, good for her. That's one of those pretty remarkable stories.
Yeah, that's a good one to share around. I mean, people are impacted by that. It's powerful.
Did we just get serious for a second on this show?
Nope. I'm That's crazy weird. And zany. Do, do, okay. do, do, do.
All right. I think we're done.
And here we meet the finale.
Let's try to finish it out. We can clock out early. It'll be great.
Okay. You didn't want to talk about Rome? When in Rome, do as the Mormons do.
Very briefly, Peggy Fletcher Stack is dumb. When in Rome, do as the Mormons do. Go see the temple. None of the Mormons or the Romans go see the temple there. That's just all there is to it. It doesn't make any sense.
Peggy Fletcher Stack and Kristen Moulton, your dynamic duo... is not.
Also, special love goes to McKay Coppins this week, who retweeted tweets I sent to him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did he retweet?
I don't remember. He was tweeting about Huntsman Romney, this and that, and I just responded to him, and then I saw that he retweeted it later on. So, hey.
Way to go. 200 of McKay Coppins' followers have seen the Openshaw tweet.
That's what I'm talking about. Boo! We should just
Peggy Fletcher Stack and Kristen Moulton, they lead out, their leading paragraph. When in Rome, do as the Mormons do, see the temple. Right alongside articles about Lady Gaga's Judas video and how the Catholic Church feels about tattoos and piercings is an essay about the soon-to-be-completed temple in Rome. Oh, Peggy Fletcher Stack. You fool.
She's like a female baker.
A who?
She's just warm and inviting. I'm pretty sure she's baked on a professional level.
Yeah. Maybe she was the one that won that Pillsbury competition back in the day. Remember when we
the salmon crust one or whatever.
Yes,
that was?
She was a dream, that lady from Riverside, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we got to work on that. We fixed the iTunes feed so that you can go get back episodes. You know, more older than the most recent 10, but it still only doesn't go back all the way. I don't know why.
Impossible.
We'll take a look at it because it still doesn't go back all the way.
We should build a really easy archive, a searchable archive. I'll do that.
Okay. So please find us on Twitter at TheRealTwim.
ThisWeekInMormons.com.
Contact at ThisWeekInMormons.com.
And Facebook.com/ThisWeekInMormons.
All right. Let's sing our way out of this one again this week. I like the way we came in. You ready?
Mm-bop, 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 yeah.
What is with everyone singing Hanson lately? This weekend, that's like the fifth Hanson reference
of my
weekend.
Twim this week. Bop, Mormons. Yeah. Come on, Jeff. Where were you on that one?
I think I'm just going to let you keep doing that until
I hate so much
the way that the things you choose to be.
Yep.
I was just going to go, this week in Mormons.
Yeah, whatever. See you later, Jeff.
And more. Keep singing, Al. Go ahead.
See you later, everybody.
Fine. Bye, everybody. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to Twim. We'll catch. Oh, by the way, happy Memorial Day for our American listeners. And be safe and all that jazz. Have a good holiday, okay? We might be back more midweek, Tuesday or Wednesday, probably, for next week's show. So that's all. Thank you very much for listening. And this has been This Week. Bye-bye.
Asleep there, a place to rest.